Hey, everybody, welcome back to the Freedom Entrepreneur Podcast. I'm your host and business consultant, Lindsay Sutherland. Excited to bring you another amazing guest today. His name is Adam Torres. He's the founder of Mission Matters and other companies, which we're going to get into. But really, what I want you to focus on and why we're here today is we're going to talk about how to pivot and stay nimble as we might move into a recession, just some key things that Adam himself has experienced in the past. And not only that, but we're going to really dig into podcasting and why that is a relevant niche for you if that's something you've been talking about. So let's go. Happy, welcome to the show, Adam. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't miss an episode. Subscribe to this show on whatever podcast player you prefer and follow me on Facebook and Instagram.
Hey friend, it's Lindsay. Pause with me for just a second. You're listening to this podcast right now, and maybe you've listened to a dozens or hundreds of episodes. Maybe you've just even done all the things. You've bought the courses, bookmarked articles, joined the Facebook groups, all because you know you need reoccurring income. It's something that's been weighing on you for a while. You might have heard me talk about it, the someday dream. Well, we're going to make this the today action. It's time to get moving. And here's the thing. You've got all the information at your fingertips. And the fact of the matter is, you don't need any more information. You're drowning in information. What you really are starving for is clarity. Everybody in the world is teaching you what to build. And YouTube is full of how-tos. But nobody is helping you figure out which one fits your business, your lifestyle, your actual audience. Which model makes sense for you? How do you know if people are going to pay for it? Where do you even start? Those are not questions that another podcast episode can answer. You, my friend, need clarity, and that's what I created for you. It's a free guide. It's called Earn 5K per month on repeat. Five simple steps that help you figure out what you should build to get that reoccurring income flowing. And it's not just what everybody else is building. It's what makes sense for your business. Because here's the truth. You don't need more information. You need to see your specific path forward. That is clarity. And that's what this guide does. So text the word freedom to 55444 and I will send it straight to you. Again, that's freedom to 55444. It's time to stop listening to all the things and start building. Okay, but definitely keep listening to this one episode, shall we? The point is, the next step is waiting for you in the guide. So take action, get that guide sent to you, and let's build something together. All right, back to the episode.
Instagram. Oh, Lindsay, I'm finally here. It's about time. I'm so excited to be on here.
I know. Where have you been?
I've been waiting for you. I'm like, where you at, Lindsay? I've been bugging you to get on this show for a while. So, hey, really appreciate you bringing me on and all the great work you're doing. So I'm excited to have some fun today.
Yeah, me too. Obviously, podcasting is fun. That's why we do it. But tell me a little bit about your story. Just, kick it off with a little bit of, background. How did you get into, online business?
Well, first thing I always like to say in this is sometimes I get maybe a little bit too much credit when you see things are a little polished now. We've done some other things. When I got into media, I had no idea what I was doing, Lindsay. My first show that I launched, I mean, I did first 300 interviews weren't I don't even know I'd call it a show. It was probably called, it could have been called tape recordings of Adam talking to his buddies on the phone and uploaded and not edited. Is that too long for a show name, maybe, but like I didn't start in media. I started in finance, so I was in finance for almost 14 years, and I was as straight as an arrow in terms of finance. I didn't know being you turn on a camera at that point, and I didn't even know how to say my name. I'd be like I'd freeze, I'd tense up. So started in finance, had a pretty long career there, did well in that, and eventually pivoted over into media where I've been for the last 9 years, going on 10 years, which is pretty unbelievable. And 10 years later, I've done over 6,000 interviews, multiple best-selling author, many books, and we built an entire platform and a community around helping others amplify their brand and their voices. So that's where we're at today.
That's exciting. But I always like to dig in a little deeper. Like, tell us about who you are. Where'd you grow up? Where do you live? Like, what's your family life like? Just a little bit more about you and kind of what is your mission? What's your heart mission? What are you doing? Like, your work?
Yeah. So
Deeper, the deeper message.
I'm in. I grew up in Michigan, so I grew up in Detroit, and I think that if there was a theme that kind of falls or that kind of follows through my work, and no matter what I've done, whether it's finance, whether it's now or otherwise, growing up in Detroit when I was growing up, it wasn't a nice place necessarily like the way it is now, and there wasn't that many opportunities. So I was always of the mindset of, the underdog mindset, like wanting to definitely make sure that I could, help myself. But of course, help others as well. So that was, if there was a central theme that went through my work, I would say that's it. And that's why, even if you look at the way we invest now, so for our platform, we could very much, if we wanted to create an influencer platform, then we could just put a bunch of the money that we make on our agency side, we could put it into ads and promote. And everybody in the world, if they knew who my name was, my show would be bigger. We're top 2% right now, but we'd be top 1% if we did that. But that's not our goal. We reinvest and we it's to make me an influencer or to be influential. The aim and the goal was always to give others a voice. And I think a lot of that does come from my upbringing and even from my mother. If I think about her, she was a social worker for over 40 years, worked with at-risk youth. I mean, she used to call it, the least of these, because they're the forgotten ones. They're the forgotten ones, really, in this country. And there's some really, rough areas still, and people that aren't doing too well in the United States. Sometimes we think that it may be only in other countries or other things. A lot of people that need help here. So I think that probably was the fuel that has been through all of my work, including books. Like if you look at books, most people, when they start writing books, it's about them and it's about their experience. We created an anthology series, much like the Chicken Soup for the Soul kind of series, where we bring together different entrepreneurs, different executives. We put them in a book and we publish them, and we get their story and their message out there. So even in like our products, everything we've created along the way, internally, our discussions are like, how is this good to help others? How does this help get somebody else's message and story out there? And that's what we do.
I think that servant heart is so powerful in entrepreneurship. I went to a marketing or a networking meeting last night. I live in a little tiny town here in Bonners Ferry. So for me, I travel 2 hours one way to go to a networking function. So it's a commitment. It's a
Wow,
6 hour
that
round
is.
tripping, you know? And I noticed it was a small room last night. They had standing room only. And I mean, the area was small. There was about maybe 20 of us or so. The people who spoke about their mission, obviously, everybody talked about their business, but the people who also talked about, like, hey, I help veterans, that's really who my heart is interested in, or I'm here to help support, blah, blah, blah. Every single one of those individuals, their voice was amplified in a way, and I don't mean audibly amplified, but I just mean like people clapped actually for them. Like it was a whole different energy than just people who were like, yeah, this is what I do. Who's here? This come by for me. So there is definitely some power in what you're saying, and I think that's an interesting perspective. Now I'm actually curious because we were talking about recession proofing. Do you find that having like an alternative mission, something bigger than, so to speak, just yourself, has been a guiding light for you through any recession type of situation?
I think that I would say the guiding light, if we had a North Star, the North Star is we want to make sure that we stay true to that, and that's helping others tell their stories and get their words out. So that's our core business. If when you think about we're big in the podcast space, we're big in publishing. We published over 400 books. PR, we do things like that as well in the back end. So we have a big team. They do good work. But if we think about like recession proof, I'll take you back to like COVID and just a bit of how I don't know if we're recession proof, but I will say that what we do a really good job of, and if there was a lesson for the audience, it's to listen to your current base of clients, and your client doesn't have to be somebody that's paying you money right now. It could be your network that wants to pay you money. So I'll give you one quick example. During COVID, prior to COVID, I used to do a lot of traveling for and now my travel schedule is getting packed again. But whether it was speaking engagements, whether it was I do in-person podcasting, I do a lot of events and stuff. So I'm known for doing that. I travel quite a bit on that piece. And that was a good profit center for us. Speaking fees can be good, especially when you're packed. And that's how you're paying salaries with that. So when COVID happened, guess what? That was closed down. So now we had to think about what's next, but we didn't like get in a conference room and we didn't say like, "Hey, what product can we make up to sell?" Our clients, like they were the people that were coming on the show, were saying they literally said, "Hey, can you help us? We're stuck at home. Can you help us launch a show? Or can you help us with podcasting?" And at first, I was like, "No," and then I'm like, "Well, wait a minute. We got staff. We got bench time because I'm not traveling, so they're not my production's not up where it was before. At the height of my production, I was doing 70 interviews a week. Right now, and when COVID happened, I was doing maybe 40, just for some context. So we had bench time." So we got into that business and we said, well, our first client we brought on, and here goes the lesson for you. We were upfront with the first client. We said, "Hey, we've never done this for anyone else. We do it for ourselves, obviously, which is why you're asking with us. Will you work with us? There might be a little bit of, challenges in the beginning, but we'll take you on as a client. We'll figure it out." They said yes. And you fast forward years later, we've launched over 250 shows, and it's a great business for us. And we're really good at it. And we've been able to grow based off of that. So now, if you think about a podcast agency, I'm not saying we're iHeartRadio. iHeartRadio has over 4,000 employees. By the way, I'm pitching iHeartRadio and doing a show for them. I was just in there and on one of their shows the other day. So I'm agnostic there. But for a level of our company, we're one of the best in the world. We've done over 250 shows. We produce over 10,000 episodes for my show, over 6,000, and the rest for clients. So that all came when you talk about recession proof, Lindsay, that came from listening to the market. So I feel that the way you can recession proof yourself is to listen to your current client base and see if you can authentically, without, having a misstep or saying you're like, we didn't start saying, "Hey, we're selling you phone lines all of a sudden." What? Like, we didn't do that. We stood in the same business. We just did. We used our current resources to fill and provide value for a need that people had that we didn't even know they were going to have.
Now, was that somehow tied to the financial side? Like, how did that relationship happen? You were doing financial stuff. I'm not even clear on exactly what you were doing financially. I mean, were you just advising on finances or not?
Well, no, that was at this point in time. This is so that was that's over 9 years ago. So when I was a financial advisor, what's interesting actually is it's they tie in when you think about big milestones or pivots, if you will. That was one. The one that you're describing. So if we go back in time when I was an advisor, almost 14 years, managed a little under $200 million. So I wasn't like a billion-dollar guy, but I worked hard and I built a good sized practice for myself. But that being said, when I went independent and I went out on my own, I had a mentor, and he says, "Adam, you got to write a book." And I'm like, "I don't want to write a book." And at this time, by the way, I know nothing about marketing, about telling your story, anything. I had a little bit of a chip on my shoulder. I started at my first financial firm when I was 16. I didn't know any better. I was around financial advisors. I was around people managing money. I mean, when I went to high school, I went for like my third and fourth year, I went like 2 hours, maybe 3 hours a day. The rest of the time I worked at the brokerage firm. So I had different influences at that point in my life. So when he brought up, my mentor brought up, "Hey, you need to write a book." I'm like, "Broke people write books. Why do I care about a $5 product? Like, how much money am I gonna make?" I didn't understand. He's like, "You gotta do it." I'm like, "Well, I listen to my mentors. If you people are where you want to be, then you should probably listen." So I listened, I wrote the book, I put it out there. And things started happening. I found myself on speaking tours as far away as China. And I'm like, "What? This is insane." Like, and I went from being from paying to speak, which for those of you that are understand, advising or raising money, many times you're paying for an event, you're paying for dinner, you're bringing in potential clients, and you make your money on the back end when they become your clients. But essentially, you're paying to speak. I wrote a book, and all of a sudden, I flipped to the other side. Lindsay, nobody ever told me. I didn't know you have a book, you have a brand, you have a message that you could actually get paid to speak. So then I found myself being paid to speak, and then I, one thing led to another. Then I eventually, the same way our podcast agency grew, that book that I described earlier, the anthology series that's like the chicken soup for your soul, same thing happened. I was bringing on people onto a show. We started a little podcast, which again, I don't know if I could even call it that. It was just recordings of Adam that were uploaded, we could call it, that were not edited, and probably were terrible, so we'll call it that. People started at, they said, "Hey, you have a book." Can you help us publish a book? And I'm like, that's insane. I'm a financial advisor. I want to manage your money. Yeah, I can help you do that. But then I thought about it and I'm like, these people are wealthy and they are people that I wanted to be my clients. I'm like, heck, I figured it out for myself. I guess I could figure it out for some other people. Then we launched that anthology series. It started growing. As that part of the business got bigger, I was blessed with a lot of things. I'm very grateful to God, but I wasn't blessed with the ability to do more than one thing very well. So, for those of you that are out there, you little Elons or mini Elons, good for you. That's not me. I can do one thing. Good on you. Okay. God didn't give me that one.
I think that's a blessing though, to be honest, Adam, because that's one thing I see a lot of entrepreneurs struggle with is the multi-passionate wanting to do so many different things and feeling like you want to do them all at the same time. And then the hardest part is telling yourself, no. I have an episode coming out on this coming Friday. I coined a term called the entrepreneur enthusiasm disease or something like that. Where it's like, we just get too excited and we're just like, yeah, let's go. But then somebody's got to be there to say, hold up, just focus on one thing and get great at that one thing. So like from me to you, I'm saying that is a blessing. That is a blessing that happened. And I love how that transitioned for you. Like you said earlier, you just listened to the market, people asking you for help. You just kind of made your little way forward. And then they're like, hey, how do you do that? Can you help me do that? That was a great visual is what I'm trying to say of exactly what you were trying to say. Just listen to people. What are they struggling with? Now that you're in media.
And that's happened twice, by the way. So the two big moments, the book product, that our PR side of things, our personal brand accelerator, even the book. I have a book coming out, 1 billion podcasts. All of these products come from just listening to your audience. And your audience doesn't have to be big. You can have an audience of 5 people. How can you help those 5 people?
Yeah. So let me ask you this then, for people, and I'm sure you have maybe some clients that have asked this question. For people who are not getting asked, you know, people aren't just reaching out and saying, hey, how'd you do that? How could they take that initiative to talk to people? What might be a good leg for them to explore to get those kinds of answers?
I don't think that they're, I think they are being asked. But what I find is most people don't actually take the time to listen. That's the thing.
Interesting.
They're being asked. There's people around you every single day. There's somebody that has a problem that they're telling you about. People talk about their problems all day long. Like they don't have to ask you directly and say, hey, can you help me start a podcast show like that? But there's some problem or there's something. Like the first person asked me or inquired about us publishing a book for them, I still remember the conversation. I sat down, I handed him my book, and he's like, man, I always wanted to publish a book. He didn't say, Adam, can you help me publish a book? It's like, but if you're sitting there and for the hosts out there, maybe a good podcast host understands this. It's about what you hear and what you're listening for. Like, that's what it is. It's not about what you're selling. So you're a podcast host, Lindsay. You're trained to listen, to catch the thing, to catch that. I go through my entire day like that. And that's the way I live. So if you start listening more, the clues are all around you, like miracles around you. Like I'm always looking through my day, like on a spiritual level, like the miracle that I'm standing inside of a building right now and it doesn't fall in my head. It's a freaking miracle. I don't know how it all works, but it's not falling in my head. We're talking to each other across the country. It's a miracle.
Yeah.
I think it's the lenses at which you look at the world. If you start thinking about how you can help others and how you can provide value, and helping others doesn't mean it has to be through a nonprofit or be a social worker like my mom. It's just solving problems. Like, how do you want to help make other people's lives better? So I would say there's something there. Like people are asking them. They just don't know for sure. If they're talking to anybody, if they're not talking to anybody and they're in a, you know, whatever, then I don't know what to say about that one.
True to that. But I think what you're saying is really powerful, because I think that's true for us in a lot of cases when, you know, somebody says, oh, like you said, he said, that's really cool. I've always thought about publishing a book. Mm-hmm. A lot of people might have taken that moment to say, yeah, it was hard, and then walk away. You know,
that's like, exactly what they would do. They would reflect back on their own experience. You hit the nail on the head, Lindsay. They'd be like, oh my gosh, let me tell you. So this is like, it was so hard to write. I did this. I did that. I just don't see the world that way. I thought about it like, oh, that person probably has a great story. He doesn't know how. He's never gonna, if I don't help him, who's going to?
I love it. How did you, when you were in that moment, you said you remembered it vividly. What did you say? Like when everybody else would have said I, what did you say?
I said, well, let me figure this out. I don't have it figured out, but let me figure it out, and maybe there's something we could do together. So I didn't overextend myself. And the reason, by the way, I said that is because I wasn't sure that I wanted to take on somebody else's problem.
No, and the really truly the reason I ask is because I think that's what trips so many people up is we just don't know what to say in the moment. And that's why I wanted you to share that
Not
because
don't know the answers. That's the thing that gets me in trouble all the time. I don't want to know the answers. Like, my favorite thing is to say, I don't know.
because
Everybody else
curiosity
gets
is the
mad.
power that brings things to fruition, you know? I mean,
I don't know. People like to know things, Lindsay. I don't. I'm like, I don't know. And I hope when I say that, you go away. That's the difference. I like to not know. I want other people in the room that do know.
No, and that you know what? You've done a great job of amplifying other people's voices and bringing those people together, just like Henry Ford. He didn't know how to ha have to know how to build the car because he knew how to find the right people, and that's your gift. So how cool is that? No, it's a good testament because I think that's
Let
something
me.
that a lot of people they're getting into entrepreneurship, and I think right now more than ever, there's people who have careers that they've either lost or they're wondering how is AI gonna affect my job? Should I be figuring something else out? They could be at a pivotal moment and they're
Can I give
wondering.
you can I give you one step forward on that
Sure.
story, though, just so you see the next one? So then, and I love the question you asked about. So what did I say? So I said, if I can figure something out, maybe we can partner on that something. And so then what I did, and this is the part where most people would just like, this is the difference between creating something and not. So then I went and I did research. So that's the thing. When I got into media full time, and when I knew I was going to be a podcast host, I took it with the same seriousness that I took my exams for my Series 7, 6, 63, my insurance licenses, my all of the, I probably like seven, I calculated it once, like 7,000 pages worth of content I had to go through to get all of those licenses to be an advisor and to do the work I did, minimum 7,000. So when I knew I was going to be in media full time and in entertainment, I went back and I studied the entire history of entertainment, and I've read more than 7,000 pages at this point. So you name it, from your Johnny Carson biographies to all of them, everything Howard Stern's ever written, everything any Oprah, all of the greats that have done this business. So it's how you approach it, and because the answers are there. So going back to the story in that particular book and that particular person, I went back and I researched the book industry and how people made money. So you talked about recessions, and I'm like, it's complicated, and people aren't necessarily making a lot of money off of books, but like, especially like full books, like they're not one. It's a lot of money. It's a lot of marketing. I'm like, it's not realistic. And so then I thought about it, and that's where I found the chicken soup for the soul model. I said, people don't necessarily want books. What they want is they want the benefit of being an author. So if I could make somebody an author, bring together a selective group of and a cohort of individuals that were all correct and that were all on brand, then what would happen is we all throw in a little bit of money, a couple grand, we get it produced correctly, edited right, make sure we have a marketing budget. And then what happens is we can all benefit from being an author, and it can all be marketed. And then we also build a community around it. So I didn't know any of that stuff prior to it. All started with that question, but then I thought about next step was, can I create a business model around this? Not can I just go out there and help people publish books because other people have done it. Can I personally create a team and execute a plan that will be profitable and allow me to continue to do it? Very different. And I couldn't do that originally. I couldn't do that with helping that gentleman publish an original one book. I couldn't do it. Now I can, but that's after we use that other model to build the infrastructure, the staff, the profitability, the data, the email list, all those things from a profitable business till we are probably in that. We probably only did our best selling, I'm proud to announce, anthology series for maybe, I think I call let's call it 6 years. years. And then in the last 3 years, during kind of like the pandemic, we started doing individual books for people. And we, one of my proudest moments, I don't know if you're a sports fan at all, Lindsay, but if you know, or anybody listening, if they're a sports fan, they know who Barry Sanders is. So the all-star running back for one of the greatest, if not the greatest running backs of all time, and for the Detroit Lions. We published his autobiography. So that was like
Very
me
cool.
being from Detroit, him. I grew up watching him,
Yeah.
greatest running back of all time. So that grew out of solving one person's problem and not being able to publish that type of book in the beginning.
Well, there's another piece of this that you embraced without maybe even realizing it, but you thought like a business owner rather than a freelancer or something like that. And I think that's a really important distinction, a mindset distinction. So often people are like, well, I could capitalize on this. I could be a business coach. I know lots of book coaches is what I meant to say. There's a lot of book coaches or people who help you go through the journey of writing your own book. That's a time for money exchange, essentially. And not to say there's anything wrong with that. I mean, obviously, if that's what you want to do, great. And you're
For
still
sure.
helping the other by the world. But I really admire, this is like my favorite thing about entrepreneurism is seeing people who created an innovative approach that built a business. Literally, the business could run without you. I mean, obviously, you're integral because you're the face and you're out doing all the things. However, it still could go on because you're not the guy coaching everybody on it, right? You've built this whole process behind it, and you didn't think small. That's the best. I mean, that's my biggest takeaway right there.
Well, we're talking about recession proofing things today. I just look at what we're capable of. That's it. Like
it's
I wasn't gonna, like I was not capable of doing the full plan at one time, but were we capable of bringing together a couple of people for that first book? Yes. And then see, I didn't know, like now we've published over 400 authors. I didn't know that was going to happen. I was just, it was an experiment. It's like, okay, it was an experiment, but it wasn't an experiment that was going to cost a lot of money. It was an experiment that if executed and we get done, there's at least a little bit of profit on the first one so that you could stay in business.
Yes. Yeah. That was a really wise approach. I admire that. Very cool. So tell me more about what you do now specifically. You said books, you said podcasting.
Yep.
When somebody comes into your ecosphere, what can they expect?
Well, first off, I like to say for the for our size of company, we give away more free content than any other media outlet on the planet, period.
Are you
So
sure? I'm just
positive.
kidding.
Positive. So just for some context, so I'll do over 1500 interviews this year. Like any given year, I've done over 6,000 interviews. So the type of content, and I think one of the unique things about our platform is that I've had the privilege of being able to travel and cover some of the world's largest conferences and just the most notable conferences in the world, like FII Priority. I was there in Miami, the president was speaking, and Elon Musk and all these other people. And now, so it's like Bloomberg, you know, Yahoo Finance, little baby Mission Matters, and that we're very small, obviously, compared to them, but we cover the same content. So when you think about the Milken Global Conference, you think about top conferences in the world, we're there and we're covering for our audience. So that's the first thing is I encourage people to definitely do a deep dive and to pick whatever type of content they like. That's the first thing. The second thing is anything to do with podcasting. I have a book coming out, 1 Billion Podcasts, The Future of All Media. My thesis in that book is very clear. There will be over 1 billion podcasts, and right now is the perfect time, whether you're working with a company like ours or doing it yourself or however you want to do it. Everybody should be launching a podcast right now, because the big, big mistake that people are thinking is they're thinking that age of industry shows demand, and it's not true. Podcasting is over 20 years old, but in reality, as a business and as an opportunity, we're probably in like year one of YouTube. So what do I mean by that? YouTube has over 115 to 150 million channels, depending on where you say, on where you get your data. There's about 4 million podcasts. Podcasts have just started. The reason there's about 4 million podcasts, I talk about this in the book and I give you the data. I show you why. I give you a whole, it's, put it this way, it's 9 years to write this book of my experience, and it's all on podcasting, very specifically, and why the opportunity is now. But One of the big reasons, I'll just give one, dynamic and any others you want, Lindsay, but dynamic advertising. That's a new thing for podcasting. YouTube in the early days, as back as 2006, 2007, had a partners program which rewarded the creator. So what did the creator get to do? The creator got to make videos, and if people watched them, they got paid. That never existed in podcasting. Dynamic advertising, that's new. That's very new in podcasting. So what is that? How did podcasting used to work? For all those years prior, it was a host read ad. Think radio. So what happens is you read the ad, and that's it. Your advertising dollars are done. That's it. It's baked into the ad. You're done. That episode's done. And guess what? Who's gonna pay you to read an ad? Only a big show. So if you didn't have a big show, you didn't even have the opportunity to earn money. So now with the ad, with the adoption and advent of dynamic advertising for podcasts, and especially when you think about, I do a lot of, as I mentioned before, international interviews. Africa, the phones that are coming online. We got India, we have these other ones. The amount of audience, we're talking about hundreds of millions of people that are going to be brought onto this platform right now. I hear people ask me the silliest question ever. Aren't podcasts saturated? And I'm like, what are you talking about? It hasn't even started what's going to happen. The audio version of this video, sure. I'm not against YouTube, by the way. I love YouTube. But the audio version of this, it's common sense. When all these other countries come online, they're going phone first. Audio, we know how sticky audio is, how easy it is to produce these shows. My first show, that was not, it was, I wasn't even edited, and I grew an audience from it. It's so easy. So that being said, that's what the whole book goes through. And so those that start now, they're going to, when there's, 50 million, 100 million podcasts, they're going to be looking back and be like, yeah, I started when there was only 4 million. They're going to look like freaking geniuses. Those that don't start now, they're going to watch the numbers go. Oh, there's 10 million. It's saturated now. Oh, there's 50 million. It's saturated now. Oh, there's 100 million. Boy, I sure wish I would have listened to Adam way back when. So
It's
that's why I
so
wrote
true.
this book, 1 Billion Podcasts, The Future of All Media.
Well, and the fact is, even though there's over 4 million podcasts out there, only a fraction of them are even still active. And that's a relevant fact. Not, I mean, it is cool because podcasts do live forever. I mean, I still get things that pop up in my search feed, and you'll see like, oh, it was last published in 2021. It's like, oh, it's not that it isn't valuable content, because it is, and it's still, and especially if you use it right. I see YouTube channel creators too who make like a little mini series, and it still produces money for them. So I know that is a relevant thing. But the fact is, there's so many podcasters that are not staying in it. But you know what I love best about podcasting?
That's my second avatar, though, by the way. So my
What's that?
first avatar is for who I wrote the book for. My first avatar was for people that haven't started a podcast. My second avatar is for people that have podcasts that keep quitting because they don't understand what they're doing yet. They don't understand the market. They don't understand. They need to educate themselves. I'll give you just one quick example here. When I was in finance, and this is just a little bit more in the longevity space and just life. So when you think about it this way, as we all age, if you're very fortunate and you're one of the people that are going to, live into old age, what's going to happen is this. A lot of your friends are going to die around you. I know that's going to sound bad, but that's the fact. And as people get older, they get more lonely, and their base of individuals around them and their support system, they get more disconnected. So as you, if you think about it, as a podcaster, let's say you're doing one episode per week. I make in the book an argument for your mental health and why you should continue to do that one episode a week, because I told you I study the history of entertainment. Unlike the old greats who were retired out because, they got old, right? This is a whole different concept that's never happened in the history of entertainment. I write in the book talking about I'm going to be a Centurion podcaster. I can already picture that I'm wearing my shirt as a Centurion podcaster or Centenarian. Sorry, 100 years old. So I always say it wrong, like Centurion. You're going to be a Roman like legion? What? No, not that. I'm going to be 100 years old. And here's the reason why, and this is the common sense of it that people don't think about. Based on our current evolution as a society, at what point are we not going to have one virtual conversation with a person? So, and the ease of recording that one conversation. So now I'll give you this one too. in the past, if a network or somebody else owned your station, what would they do? Retire you, bring on the new person. In this case, as you age, you're gonna be at the height of your power as you get older, the height of your audience, the height of your connection, the height of your purpose and understanding. So you shouldn't be thinking about the next 5 years. You should be thinking about the next 50 years of your show. And when you start thinking about it that way, it becomes common sense. Why would you want to give up a conversation with, especially as you get older and your show grows and you have more traffic? The mm-hmm. most interesting people, I've only been in this business 9 years, and I talk to some of the most interesting people in the world. And it's insane. It's unbelievable. I've only been doing this 9 years. It's perspective. The greats, we think about the Johnny Carsons of the world, 30-year career on TV. So
I listened to Tucker Carlson, and he's like, oh yeah, I talked to this leader and that world country leader, and I'm just like, whoa.
So that I Lindsay, I'm no Tucker Carlson. I have nowhere near as big of a platform. I have, and I'm supposedly it's not all ink, but I should be interviewing 3 African presidents in 2026. Mm. Insane.
It's
but
true.
But I did, though, I've been doing it 9 years and I keep mm-hmm. doing it. So I'm telling these stories because that's the second avatar in the book. I want podcasters to get understand what they're actually doing and to stop quitting. It's ridiculous.
100%.
They quit, and you know, jump onto something else. Why?
And I'll tell you why. Because I'm an act. If you go back, I've left all my episodes out since I started in 2021, and I was real hardcore at it in the beginning, and then I kind of took a hiatus because I lost interest. Part of my issue was I got bored. I found that a lot of my guests were coming on to do just a pitch fest, and that was partly my lack of matureness, I suppose you'd say, because ultimately, I just didn't know how to curate the conversation or seek out better guests. I was just taking who was given to me, and it burnt me out. I was like, this isn't feeling.
Can I give you something? I'll give you, and I talk about this in the book. It was all of that are the details, but it was really, it's really what you needed was a mindset shift.
100%.
If you were thinking about planning your show for the next 20 years, it takes all the pressure off.
Mm-hmm.
And you're better off, and I talk about this in the book, you're better off doing one episode a week or one episode every other week and plan that out in your mind for the next 20 years than to do a bunch of episodes or to do a daily show. That's why when I say I've done over 6,000 interviews, this is what I do for a living. This is my profession. I've earned the right to do this full time. If you want to do that, great. But you have to start thinking about, and what I talk about in the book, and I made this up. I don't even know. I'll give just one thing. It's funny. So I call it like the Goldilocks dilemma of podcasting. And it's basically like, for those of you that know the story of Goldilocks and the Three Bears, it's like, you know, the porridge is either too hot at just right or it's too cold. So if you think about how that relates to your business and life, If your business is going too well and it's too hot and everything's growing too fast, guess what? You don't have time to podcast. If you're not making money and your business isn't making money and you're thinking about how you're going to pay your rent, guess what? You don't have time to podcast. Podcasting is in this weird space for most people because of the way they approach it, to where it just has to be just right. And I make that argument, my Goldilocks dilemma of podcasting in the book. But how do you win from that? You don't even play that game. You just start projecting, you start tying it into your lifestyle, and you design a schedule that is sustainable forever. Mm-hmm. Because all of the arguments, all the things that I'm talking about, it's even just scratching the surface. I've been doing it 9 years and I'm just starting to get to understand what I'm doing. Last year, unfortunately, and I talk about this in the book, unfortunately, I lost my mom, and it was very sudden. It was for a tornado, Lindsay. Can't make this stuff up. Like literally Wizard of Oz stuff. I'm not even joking. Like it was last year during Hurricane Milton. There was 6 people that passed due to the the tornadoes prior. She was one of those. It was insane. It was like a direct hit on her home.
Oh my goodness.
Threw across the streets, and it was act of God completely. Yeah. Like, there's nothing else you can eat. The neighbors' houses were okay. Insane. Ugh. So looking back, and I think about it, and I'm like, what do I value most? I brought her on the show a couple times. I have those recordings. I don't have kids. I'm not married. I hope to be one day, but her grandkids, if I do have kids, they're going to be able to hear their grandmother's voice in those mm-hmm. episodes. So there's so many layers further above doing business and making money to this that I don't understand yet. I'm still, that's a new experience. I wouldn't have known what that meant, but we're part of each other's legacy. We're part of each other's lives. And this platform and this format, the way it's designed, the way it connects people, it's unlike anything else. We can literally lift humanity with something like this. First time in history that we've all had the opportunity to participate in telling our own story. First time ever.
It's so true. And both of my parents passed away before ever hitting retirement. That's part of one of the reasons I started podcasting. And of course, my mom died in 94. So it was before, you know, really we all had cell phones. There was no getting video of people. And let's face it, as people get older, you just don't walk around taking selfies and videos of yourself anymore. You know what I mean? Yeah. So to share that.
For our generation, not the next one. I don't know. They're going to be like, they're going to have their holograms, everything else. Like they're going to live
forever.
We don't
know what the future will hold, but
they're going to live forever.
Yeah.
at least digitally. Digital format, digitally.
Yeah. Yes. Well, that was kind of my thought is if my kids could come back and after I'm gone, just listen to my voice. It doesn't really matter what I'm talking about. Even they're going to feel that connection, hear my laugh, all of that. So that was a big motivator. But you know what else I wanted to tell you is I did have like a year where I only produced maybe 4 or 5 episodes and I missed it so much. I missed podcasting. Going back to what you were talking about as far as building the connections and how dynamic it is as far as building relationships with people, it was something that I'm like, man, I enjoy it so much. It doesn't matter anymore to me if I make money at it. I love doing it. So I actually think for me, the break was helpful because it really re-inspired and showed me my true north, which was, yes, I'm a podcaster. I identify as a podcaster.
Welcome to the club.
Oh, it's so good. Well, this has been an amazing conversation. When does your book come out?
It's going to be out in mid-November, actually. We're in mid-November. It's the 13th. Actually, it's next week. Next week, it'll be out in November for Thanksgiving. It'll be out right before Thanksgiving.
Okay. Is it available for pre-order?
It's not available for pre-order, but what I'm telling people is just go to my Instagram, Ask Adam Torres, and you're going to see a whole lot of stuff coming out. There's going to be contests, prizes. I mean, there's going to be all kinds of stuff.
It's
my first book that I've personally written. No ghostwriter, so it's just like you're talking to me, and I use ghostwriters all the time. I'm for ghostwriters. We're a publishing company. Of course, I use ghostwriters. This one's all written by me. I haven't done that in 9 years. I'm very excited about it.
Exciting. That is awesome. Well, thank you so much for gracing us with your wisdom today and your heart. I appreciate it. You are an amazing human and thanks for making a difference in the world.
Thank you, Lindsay. Keep it up. I'm excited.
Me too.